You're listening to Life in Deep Ellum's podcast.
Well, good morning. If I have not met you before, my name is Rachel, and my husband Joel and I are the pastors here at Life in Deep Ellum. Joel is not here today. He is still on sabbatical, which means he is in Big Bend, hiking, enjoying nature. He sent me a picture this week, and he was out on this mountain, and there's just mist all around, and He just texted, he said, "I'm in the mountains of mist." And so I texted him back a picture of all the books on my desk. And I said, "The only mountains I'm enjoying are mountains of work." So, but I am very grateful that as a community, you guys give us this opportunity to take time off. My dad did come into town this weekend to save me. So dad to the rescue. This is him, Tony. He's the one who raised me. This morning, if you need a Bible, if you'll raise your hands, our youth are taking up a new initiative here at the gathering, and they are the ones handing out Bibles. So if you need one this morning, if you'll raise your hand, they will bring you one. We are not putting scripture verses on the screen because we like for you to be able to handle the Bible for yourself and make sure that I'm telling you the truth about things. So we are continuing our series, Me Versus We, this morning. As Joel said last week, the feedback we got from our life group leaders this past fall as we were doing our sermon planning with them is that there's a lot of transition in the lives of those of you who are part of the gathering. And that transition we're defining as personal change, so it may be related to your vocation, to relationships, to your health, life stage, just some kind of personal growth that you're trying to embrace. And in this series, as we're discussing this idea of transition, the question we want to look at in the Me Versus We series is, how do we deal with personal change in the midst of community? If you remember, this series is intended to help us move kind of out of an individualistic way of thinking and broaden our perspective a little bit to really consider, what does it mean to be a part of a community? And so today we're going to talk a little bit about, what does it mean to be a part of a community in the midst of personal change? And there's one word that I want to give you this morning that is going to be critical to what I'm going to suggest. And that word is integration. How do we move through personal change in the midst of community? We have to be integrated. So let me tell you how I'm understanding integration this morning. Etymologically, integration is an antonym of, it's the opposite of the word segregation. And sadly, we have a lot of examples in our communities of how dysfunctional communities become when they're segregated. Prejudice rises in us. There's an extreme us versus them thinking. I came across this meme this week whenever I was studying. It says, "Cat people and dog people may not agree on much, but they can agree that bird people are crazy." Yes, we can laugh about that kind of segregation. But there are other segregations that are not humorous whatsoever. Societal segregation is one of these. This kind of segregation, societal segregation, it dehumanizes people, it objectifies them, it places greater societal value on one type of person or one kind of people over others. And that's the kind of segregation we continue to see here in Dallas. We see it in our school systems, our justice systems, even in our neighborhoods. But there's another kind of segregation, and this is the one I want us to really sit with this morning, and it shows up inside of all of us. It's a kind of segregation that shows up in each of us. It's different than societal segregation, but it can be just as destructive. Most of us have very segregated interior worlds. There are feelings and memories that we do not want to sit with. There are people that we may treat one way in this external world, but in our internal world, we are objectifying and dehumanizing them in our hearts. There are places in our thoughts that we just cannot, will not go. Another word for this is compartmentalization. I heard someone say, "Oh, I'm really good at compartmentalization." And I was sitting over there going, "You know, that's not a good thing, right?" But compartmentalization, what it means, it literally means we create compartments in our minds where some things belong and others don't. And the problem with this approach to life, when we segregate our interior world, when we begin to function by compartmentalizing feelings and people and thoughts and experiences, is we have to find some way to escape what doesn't belong. We want to find some way to escape the things that don't belong. Now, there's a problem with this. How do we escape something that exists inside of us? How do we escape something that exists inside of us? The Apostle James, he starts to get at this problem in James 4. If you want to turn there, we're going to be in that passage for just a little bit this morning. James chapter 4, starting in verse 1. And I'm just going to read the first verse. James says this, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from the desires that battle within you?" There are these things that are battling within us, and we want to escape it rather than deal with it. So, how do we escape something that exists inside of us? If you answered, "I just stop thinking about it," that's an excellent example of compartmentalization. Now, if instead you answered, I can't really escape it, you are absolutely right. But we still all try. We try numbing, we try disconnecting, we try denial, repression, we try to just distract ourselves, but those things only work for so long. They only work for so long. But there is another way to live. We can respond to God's invitation to us to be truly integrated human beings. Truly integrated human beings. So let me define integration, being integrated, according to the way that I understand it. And this is just coming out of my brain, so you feel free to disagree with me. This is how I would define being an integrated human being. It's coming to accept all of my human experience so that its meaning becomes an ordered part of my reality. It's coming to accept all of my human experience so that its meaning becomes an ordered part of my reality. We tell ourselves stories about everything that's ever happened to us in our lives. And a lot of times those stories get put on shelves, and if we don't bring them out and actually examine them and integrate them, the stories that we've been telling ourselves continue to impact us and shape us in ways that we're probably completely unconscious of. So let me give you an example of how this might work. Let's say you have a relationship in your life that's challenging. I don't know, let's pick marriage. Maybe you marry someone who is very close to their family. And at times, it seems like they are prioritizing their family of origin over you. Over time, you begin to gather proof of your fear. And you find yourself growing resentful, and your thoughts grow brooding, and you begin to yourself say things like, "He will never care about me as much as he cares about what his great aunt Sally thinks. If his great aunt Sally is so wonderful, why doesn't he just go live with her? Why even ask me anything? He's just a little boy. He's going to do what his parents want him to do." Even just like pretending, that makes me really uncomfortable. And it is uncomfortable. And what happens in our relationships is when we have these kind of thoughts and then we get into a fight, those things start to come out of our mouths and we say it out loud. And then that goes really, really bad. And so our solution is, as we take these thoughts and feelings and experiences and emotions and we put them in a box and then we stick them on a shelf. And we're like, "Whew, not gonna go there again." And it seems like for a little while, things get better. There's a little bit of peace. But there is something that has been shelved and not dealt with. And the reality is when we shelve thoughts, feelings, emotions, people, when we compartmentalize parts of our human experience rather than integrating them, what is happening is we are adding weight that we have to carry, whether we're conscious or unconscious of it. There are these weights that we are just putting around us that we are going to have to carry, and generally we're trying also to escape. The Apostle Paul says it this way, going back to James 4, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. I hope none of you are doing that. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and you fight. There are these weights that we are carrying, and even whenever they're shelved, they're going to come out somewhere. After Thanksgiving, I started doing CrossFit. Yeah. Whenever I told my cousin, who's an orthopedic surgeon, his response was, "Thank you for your business." But I am trying to be wise and not give in to the peer pressure to lift more weight than I'm actually strong enough to live and lift. So Lindsay, one of our staff members, was asking me, I guess it was probably 2 weeks ago, she's like, "Okay, Rachel, so like in on the spectrum of like the strongest person in the class to the weakest person in the class, where are you?" And I was like, "Oh, Lindsay, sweetheart, I am like way on the weakest. I'm like, these people are years ahead of me." So much so, to the point that whenever we're working with the barbell, and if it's something that they do Olympic lifting there, which I'm completely new to, and that's the one where you have to kind of like jump when you bring it up. So there are these moves where you have to like bring this weight up over your head and then go into a squat and then lift it up and then do that repeatedly over and over again. And so everybody else in the class, they have like these giant plates on the ends of their barbells. They're working like this impressive amount of weight. Oh, not your pastor. No. I literally, when we're doing anything related to shoulders, I have to go get what they call the change plates. Do you guys know what these are? They are the plates that are so small that everybody else in the class is just like throwing them on the end just to add change to what they're lifting. So I'm over there with my itty-bitty change plates. I call them my baby weights. That's what I tell the people in the class. Here I am with my baby weights, everybody. And that's what I lift because it's what I can lift without harming myself. And I don't want to harm myself. I want to get stronger over time. And when we're adding weight to our life and we're doing that in a way that is unconscious and it just keeps adding and adding, it is very likely that we're going to harm ourselves and others in ways that we don't mean to, that we don't intend to. But when things are unintegrated, when they're unexamined, when feelings and thoughts and experiences are just getting shoved in boxes and put on shelves, pain happens. Pain happens. But as I've said, there is another way to live. We can be integrated. So going back to this example of marriage that we were discussing, what if in your relationship you began to note what was empirically true? What is empirically true? What could be recorded with a video camera? And for the record, I'm not suggesting that any of you set up nanny cams. As tempting as that might be, you're like, "I'm going to capture that fight on video." And then you're going to see how you really are in those moments. Not suggesting that. What I'm saying is, someone else stepped into the room, what would they see? What would they observe? What is empirically going on? If you slow things down and you begin to examine these parts of your life that you see as problems, well, in this case, maybe you would notice that, yes, sometimes this person you love values their family's opinion over yours, but not always. Not always. Maybe you might come to recognize, wow, we've only been married for a couple of years. They were with their family a lot longer. Maybe we're just building trust, and this is a part of the process, and that's okay. Maybe you would discover, if you really examined what was going on, that what's coming up in you is actually insecurity, that you feel a little insecure because sometimes your spouse is actually right to take their family's advice. Great Aunt Sally is got some life wisdom and experience that we should all be listening to. Conversely, maybe you recognize that, man, what really concerns me is that when my spouse takes their family's advice, they generally don't get the outcome that they're hoping for. But the point is, regardless of what you notice, something happens when we begin to slow it down and we look at what is in this experience rather than going, "Whew, I'm going to put that on a shelf. When we slow things down and we begin to examine what is going on there, when we begin to really look at it, we understand more about our reality, what's really going on, and we can do something constructive with that. We can do something constructive with that. Integration is always about examining and coming to a greater understanding of your reality. I firmly believe that integration is the spiritual path. Our bird people, cat people, you gotta learn how to love them. Dog people, you gotta learn how to love them. Janice, I love you. Janice is our resident bird person. In society, when we feel prejudices rising in us, we've got to examine those. Integration is always the spiritual path. And it's true for our interior lives as well. We've got to be willing to look at what's there and address it. Paul the Apostle, he asked this question in Romans 8, and I love it. He says, what can separate me from the love of God in Christ Jesus? And his answer was nothing. Nothing in all the world, no circumstance, no person, nothing in nature, nothing supernatural, nothing at all can separate me from the love of God. And then he goes a step further and he says, I believe that all things work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purposes. Nothing can separate me from the love of God. God is working all things together for my good. That, my friends, that is a reflection of what it looks like when we're living an integrated life. We realize no experience, nothing that has ever happened to me, that will ever happen to me, can separate me from the love of God. The shame that I just want to shelf, if I will look at it, like we do the confetti that continues to come down after Easter for many, many, many months. So whenever the preaching is good, that the confetti rains down. That's how I interpret it. But it's that process where we go, this all can be worked together for our good, all of it. But this isn't a magical process. Integration, this process where we go, all the things that have hurt us, all the things that have helped us, all the things that scare us, all the things that give us hope are all being pulled into creating us to be the person that God designed us to be. That thing that Paul's talking about, it's not a magical process where God just waves his hand like I was doing over our lives and suddenly all is well. This is a process that involves our bodies, our choices, our awareness of, and our willingness to listen to God's voice in our lives. Going back to James 4. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. And when you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. When I went and walked the Camino in October of this past year, to be clear, I only did the last third of the Camino. It's 500 miles, 800 kilometers, and I did 278. So I did like the last third. I would love to walk the full thing, but I don't want you guys thinking I have already walked the full thing. So whenever I went, one of the prayers that I prayed as I was walking was I wanted God to integrate me with my body better. You guys know I'm really open about the fact that I struggled with eating disorders in college and have had body image issues since then and have a weird relationship with food. And it's just always been this thing. And I've done a lot of work around it, but there's just this certain level of healing that I felt like I was powerless to get to. And so I wasn't really sure why I was walking the Camino. This sabbatical hadn't been on this calendar for as long as they normally are. But it was just what happened. And so I'm walking and I'm in pain because you walk 16 to 20 miles a day. And, you know, so I'm hurting. And so I'm just, okay, this is a good opportunity for me to pray, God, will you integrate me back in with my body somehow? And then I get to Santiago de Compostela, which is the end, and nothing had happened, in my opinion. Like, there were other amazing, beautiful things that God did. But there wasn't, like, this big, like, Rachel and her body are integrated now, and all things are well, and all manner of things shall be well. It was like, well, I asked, and sometimes when we pray, God says yes, sometimes he says no, and sometimes he says wait. Well, in the rest of our time together this morning, I want us to answer the question together of how do we deal with personal change, transition? How do we do that moving towards integration in the context of community? And there are two things I want to suggest. One is self-care, and can I get a little whoop? Because our community loves self-care, I know that. And the other one is boundaries. Can I get a little dun-dun-dun? Oh, thank you. I didn't think you guys would actually do that. Wonderful. But I want to start with self-care, because if we don't have good self-care, we're not going to get very far with boundaries. I don't know if you guys recognize those two things are deeply connected. If we are not caring for ourselves, what chance is there that we're going to have a healthy enough sense of ourselves to know what boundaries we need in our life and in our relationships? That's not a three, that's a zero. A big, fat zero chance. Pretty much none. So let's start with the basics. What is self-care? Again, this is my definition of self-care. Self-care, in my opinion, are ways of being that lead us into a healthy sense of self, of our needs, and a growing awareness of what God is inviting us into. It's ways of being that lead us into a healthy sense of self, our needs, and into a growing awareness of what God is inviting us into. I would say that part, a healthy sense of self, also includes our motivations. You know, James said, hey, you don't get what you want because you're asking, and there are these motives that are going on. So part of self-care is going to wake us up to what's motivating us. There's a quote that I read January 3rd. I know the exact date because it's in a daily reader. And it's by Melody Beattie, and it's the Daily Reader is called The Language of Letting Go. And I love the way she frames this. She says, self-care leads us on the path to God's will and plan for our life. Self-care never leads us away from our highest good. It leads toward it. And when I read that, I was like, yes, that is a fantastic way of understanding self-care. I like continuums. I like spectrums. I have a graph for you guys that I made up that I think is true. Whenever we're talking about self-care, I think self-care is the balanced center on the opposite end are two extremes. On one side, we have denial. And I think whenever we are in this place of denial, we don't have enough of what we really need. Our real needs and wants are unknown. And for this reason, we adopt patterns and stay in relationships where we lose our sense of self. When we move towards denial, it's just there's not enough of what we really need. We don't know what those needs are, and we lose ourselves. On the other side, I would call there's this spectrum where we're going into this place of indulgence. And here, we're aware of some needs and wants, but the real answers to those needs and wants are unknown. So we end up with too much of what we, quote unquote, need without ever truly being satisfied. And this often results in over-identifying with patterns and relationships in a way that leads us to a false self. So on one side, we have no sense of self. On the other side, we have a false sense of self. But there's this balanced place between the two where I know what I need and want. I'm able to meet those needs and wants or ask other people to help me meet those needs in appropriate ways. I don't have disordered attachments to substances, people, experiences, power. My sense of self consistently centers me and leads me toward God. That's self-care. So what does that look like in our lives? What does it look like to know what we need and what we want? Well, self-care will look different in different seasons of life. James says, you don't have because you do not ask. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives. There is a piece of discernment that comes into self-care. I was reading Luke this week, and I love that when Jesus went into the wilderness to pray in Luke 4, he fasts for 40 days. And so in that moment, self-care led him to abstain from all food. In the very next chapter, he's calling his disciples, and he calls the disciple Levi. And whenever he calls Levi, Levi decides to throw this huge banquet. And so Jesus goes, and he eats with Levi and all of the people that Levi invited, even though the religious leaders thought it was very inappropriate for Jesus to be eating in that context. Self-care at that time led Jesus to eat. Now, in case you can't tell, I want us to think of self-care in a wider way than it's often applied. We often have been conditioned to think of self-care in terms of what do I need to do with my body to manage my stress. And that's one aspect of self-care, but self-care is broader than that. Self-care looks like any right action that leads me towards greater security in God. Any right action that leads me towards greater security in God. Jesus fasted, and it more securely attached him to God's purpose for his life. Jesus ate, and it more securely attached him to the people that God had sent him to be with. Last week, Joel talked a little bit about the importance of doing the next right thing, and that is one way to think about self-care. But all I could really think in that moment was how much he needed to break out into song.
Right thing, take a step again. It is all that I can to do. The next right thing.
See, Joel would have pulled that off way better than me. I was sitting there going, he's gonna do it, he's gonna do it. He didn't do it. But that is one way to think about self-care. If you don't know, that's from Frozen 2, as it said on the screen. To do the next right thing. When it's doing the next right thing specifically, in my opinion, that more securely attaches you to God. How many of you are familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs? Yes, good. I love whenever I see lots of hands. The theory is that you cannot meet higher needs until the lower needs are addressed. I've shared before that about 5 years ago now, 6 years ago now, when my self-care was basically at a zero, my big step, the thing that I felt God inviting me to do, was to have a nightly skincare routine. Which seems like an interesting thing for God to invite you to do, but for me, it was a daily ritual that was reminding me that I'm worthy, that God says that I am worthy, that I am worth caring for in these ways, that I can have a multi-step ritual that I can indulge in that's actually really more self-care. Now, that was 6 years ago. Washing my face has become more of a habit. Jesus and I are working on other things. But it's important for us to realize that, you know, I really do believe that God wants us to get all the way up to where self-care is about that self-actualization. But if we're not caring for our basic needs, we're never going to get there. We're never going to get to that place if we don't take care of those basic things too. Life is going to take us up and down this hierarchy of needs. But self-care always leads us, regardless of what level you are on. Self-care always leads us on the path to God's will and plan for our lives. Self-care never leads us away from our highest good. It leads us towards it. I want to go back to that graph that I showed you guys, and I want to add another layer because there is an innate connection between self-care and boundaries. Boundaries are really a way of staying connected to reality and learning what we need and want. And that's knowing what we need and want is huge during times of transition. And so we've already gone over what's on the bottom half of this graph, but what I believe is that self-care and boundaries, they keep us in reality. They keep us from taking, compartmentalizing things and shoving it on the shelves. But whenever we move towards denial or indulgence, that's how we're trying to escape reality. And whenever we begin to escape reality, we are moving away from self-care, which means we're also moving away from healthy boundaries. So there's this beautiful place that we want to learn how to stay in that middle part of the continuum where we're in balance, where we're connected to our reality no matter how painful it might be, that we're staying there, we're inviting God to come and show us what is going on. One of my favorite, don't put up the slide just yet, Oh, she already did it. It's okay. You can leave it up. One of my favorite resources right now on boundaries, because I would love to take an hour now and teach you all about boundaries, but you guys don't want to be here with me for another hour. So instead, what I will say is there's a resource on boundaries that I really appreciate. It's by a lady named Vicki Tidwell Palmer, and she is a very motherly, very straight-laced lady whose blog and podcast, if you're easily offended by profanity, you can cover your ears right now. Her blog and podcast are called Beyond Bitchy, Mastering the Art of Boundaries. Everybody okay? Okay, excellent. And it's really funny to me because she won't even curse on her podcast. And I'm like, this is who told you to name it this? But it's fun. But she's written this book called The Five-Step Boundary Solution. And if you really want to grow in the area of healthy boundaries and you appreciate like practical steps into this stuff, she's great. On her landing page, there's even, you see that little get the free clarifier? She has this PDF that you can download that will walk you through the five steps if there's something that you're wanting to work on a boundary around. And she even tells you, like at the end, if your boundary doesn't work, this is what you can do. And if, I mean, it's really helpful. So I'm going to let Vicki do that part of my job. If you were interested, go check out her stuff. But step three of her five steps. So step one is you identify your reality. Step two is you identify the vision that you have for your life. Like, here's our problem, here's reality, this is what I want it to actually look like. And then in step three, you go, what? She calls it your power center. What I would say is that this is where you go, what are the experiences, the options of how I can create this vision that I actually have for my life? And in the first experience, you understand, you come to realize, I have the power to create that outcome. I can take that step myself. I can do that. The second experience is I need to ask for help. And she says that help specifically is when you need expert advice. This is whenever you need an expert's help. This isn't when you go and you ask your husband for help, or you ask your roommate for help, or you ask your family for help, or your friends for help. When we're in that space, that's experience three, I need to make a request. There's a vision for my life. I cannot get there on my own. I've got to make a relational ask of someone else. That's experience three. And experience four is I am powerless and need to surrender to God. I can't make this change. Nobody else can make this change for me. I know all the things that I need to know. I just need God to show up. Now, people often begin to get overwhelmed by the idea of boundaries and self-care. Even just now, me just telling you step three, those four options, some of you may be sitting out there going, I don't know, which experience do I have? Can I do this on my own? Do I need help? What's the difference between help and a request? I mean, it can be a little overwhelming. Joel likes to quote, there's this fantastic pastor, he has passed away. His name's Eugene Peterson. Joel loves this quote from him. The quote supposedly goes that someone asked Eugene Peterson, what has he learned in all of his years of pastoring? And supposedly, Eugene Peterson said this, people don't know what they need. I understand the sentiment. I would revise the statement to say, people don't know that they know what they need. People don't know that they know what they need. I have a firm conviction that I want to share with all of you this morning. I believe that God is always speaking to all of us. He's always speaking to all of us. The challenge is that often we are operating more on those spaces of denial and indulgence, and we've really got a lot of compartmentalization going on, and we're trying to escape our reality. And so we have a hard time actually discerning where God's voice is showing up for us. Because I promise you, it's there. I want to demonstrate, and I'll use examples from my own experience of life. How many of you have ever, in a season, felt deep exhaustion? I don't mean like, I didn't get enough sleep last night, my kids woke me up too early, but I mean just soul-weary exhaustion. Yeah, that is not an uncommon human experience. Before my first sabbatical, I was exhausted all the time. It did not matter how much sleep I got. I had no energy at all. And for months before I burned out and had to go on sabbatical, I had just been this tired. And looking back, what I recognized is that this was God trying to help me understand that I had limits that he had given me that he did not want me to push through, that the answer wasn't doing more, being stronger, taking none of those things that I was trying to do were the answer. The answer, the solution, would have been to go, I feel really deeply exhausted. What is God saying to me? And the lesson that I learned in that season of life is that limits are a gift. I'm not supposed to be God. There are boundaries to the work that he has asked me to do. And if I try to push outside of those boundaries, it is not going to go well for me. So that exhaustion was saying something to me about the way that God wanted me to care for my life and myself and the boundaries that I needed to have around my work, around my identity. What was I getting my sense of value from? There were some boundaries. There was some self-care that I needed to step into. This one will be it'll be maybe new to think about for some of you. But how many of you have consistently had an ache somewhere in your body? You don't have to raise your hands for this. I'm just asking. You've had an ache somewhere in your body that is not related to an injury. If it's not an injury, why are you hurting? Why are you hurting? Have you considered that God may be using your body to bring attention to something your conscious mind isn't yet attending to? For me, kids are the best at this. Like, kids are very in tune to how God speaks to them through their bodies. I mean, if you talk to a kid and you start to use language around, well, what do you feel when that happens? They'll talk to you about, like, oh, I had this feeling in my stomach, or oh, this. I mean, it's really interesting, and we lose that connection to hearing God in that way as we get older. But for me, what I realized is that for several years, I would occasionally just get this really terrible pain at the base of my neck, the top of my back. And, you know, I would just think like, oh, I slept wrong. Oh, I was hunched over my computer too much. And then there was a moment when I was in my reality, not because I wanted to be, but because it was unavoidable. I was in deep emotional distress. And then out of nowhere, that pain shows up. And I was like, whoa. That was God trying to go, Rachel, there is some deep pain you are not dealing with. There's some deep pain you're not dealing with. I'm trying to help you see. Will you listen to me? Will you be curious about what's going on? Last example from my life. Again, no need to raise your hands. This isn't a 12-step group. I do recommend those, however. How many of you would say, well, I've gained an amount of weight this year that I wouldn't say I'm happy about, or I've lost an amount of weight that wouldn't be considered healthy? I shared on the Camino that I asked God to reintegrate me with my body, and that nothing really happened at that point in time. So that was October. You know, and so I just, that thought, that prayer didn't go away, but it also, nothing really seemed to happen, so I was kind of in that waiting mode. And then I had an experience a month ago, and a big old box on my shelf got knocked off. And all this stuff spilled out, and there was no putting it back in the box. I was just going to have to deal with it. It was there. I didn't even really know how big the box was and how much had been in it, but it got knocked off, and I was just like, okay, God, I guess we're dealing with this now. But what blew my mind, what's blown my mind in the last month, is that 80% of my issues with food just evaporated. They were just gone all of a sudden and I realized, I was like, oh my goodness. How much energy have I been putting into keeping this stuff pushed on a shelf? How much has food been a way for me to just not have to really deal with these things that apparently I wasn't ready to deal with. And that's something I want to encourage you guys with, that as you begin to look at what's going on in your body and your heart and your mind and your practices and your patterns and your behaviors, you do not have to be afraid to look at what is being brought to your attention. God will never bring something to you that you're not ready for. My experience is when he begins to make us conscious of things that are going on in us, it's because we're ready to deal with them, that we are in a place to deal with them. So much so that literally that day, this is just an example of the grace of God. I'd had my annual meeting with the board, and the board had said to me, "Rachel, you know, this has been a really hard year for you guys. You've been a real rock and anchor. If you need counseling at any point in this next year, we just want you to know we're going to help you cover that." I was in counseling 2 days later. Not only did God know I was ready, he provided the means, because our God is just that good, and so is our board of directors. They really are wonderful. But God set up the world so that when we disconnect with reality, there are these signs pointing us back towards integration. And they are red flashing lights. We started with the video from Psalm 139, and it says this: "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." He sees our inmost being now too. He sees all of our compartments and all the things that are on our shelves, and he doesn't want us to have these pieces of ourselves that are unknown to us forever. He's made our lives in a way that change is always possible. Life is full of transitions and opportunity for growth and change and moving into a new level of integration. I want to add one more layer to our chart this morning before we conclude. So there is a boundary that not everybody talks about, but I've come to believe in, and I'll call it the eternal boundary. And what I mean by this is I think, and just to be clear, this is not an evangelical concept where everything you do is moving you towards heaven or hell. That's something else. This eternal boundary, what I mean is everything that you have experienced in your life stays with you. You can't escape it. So we either spend our energy integrating our experiences, our emotions, our feelings, processing them, bringing them to the Lord, talking to him about them, letting him show us what's really going on, letting God tell us our true stories. Or we futilely try to escape what's happening or what has happened to us. And so the way that I see it is we've got this boundary that it encompasses all of it. Whether we're in this beautiful place where we are centered in self-care and boundaries, or we're somewhere on the edges, we're escaping and denying and trying to keep these things on the shelves and compartmentalized. But what happens is when we move towards God and others via positive self-care and boundaries, what happens is that eternal boundary, we have this experience of feeling like it collapses a bit, and it begins to sync up with our reality. And so there are these moments in life where we experience what has for so many years been called transcendence. It's where I feel connected to God, and I feel connected to others, and I feel myself moving into the space of being more of who God created me to be, and it is this feeling of wholeness, and it is amazing. And it lasts for a time, and then it starts to pull back out again. And we begin to notice these flashing red lights, these feelings, these thoughts, these compartments, these things on the shelves. And we receive new invitations, new insight from God about needs that we have, things that he's wanting to show us about ourselves. What boundaries do we need in our relationships? And then we begin to step into that. We move into the invitations that God's offering to us. We step into that self-care, and we feel that eternal boundary come close again.
And again, we have that experience of transcendence and wholeness, and it's beautiful and it's wonderful. And this happens over and over and over again in our lives, and that's what's supposed to happen. Because that's what integration feels like. And I hope that I live to be 102. Because I think that might give me enough time that maybe I'll finally get to that place where my eternal boundary and my reality are just always hugging each other. Maybe if I get to live to be 102, I'll just experience that sense of transcendence and wholeness all the time. But the thing that I love about community is when we are together, that transcendence is always present. What did Jesus say? Where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst of them. So you have a little bit of that transcendence now. I have a little bit of that transcendence now. You have a little bit of that transcendence now. And when we are together, we get to experience more of it. It encourages us. When you share your story about how God has moved you, that's an invitation for me to step into it. When you share your vulnerability and how God has healed you, or when you share how he hasn't yet healed you, we're stepping into that together. And so how do we move? How do these passages happen? Friends, integration is not a lonely path. We do it with others. Escaping, no matter how many people are with you, you are still going to feel alone. So we move through this together, trusting the beauty of our great God and one another. Everything I ever wanted, I found in you. And that finding is often in the context of community. It's often in the context of community. So this week, I would encourage you to do this. Set some time aside where you begin to go, what are the flashing red lights in my life right now? What are those things that keep coming up, whether it's something in my body, in my emotions, in my thoughts, in my experience? Begin to be curious about that and talk to the Lord about it. Begin to consider, is this something that I can address? Do I need help? Do I need to make a request? Am I powerless? That was my experience on the Camino. I was powerless. It took God knocking a box off my shelf. If we ask him, he's going to show up. So can I pray for you this morning? Lord, I thank you for the way that you are present in this community. I thank you for every experience, every bit of hard-won wisdom. Lord, I thank you for the healing that has come to the people in this room. I thank you for the healing that is coming. Lord, I thank you for the lives that have been lived and that I just ask that we'll keep showing up for you and with one another. Lord, teach us how to move towards you and toward one another in self-care and in boundaries. And may we know that experience of being made whole as individuals and as a community. And I ask for this in the strong name of Jesus. And all God's people say, amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he make his face to shine on you. May he be gracious and compassionate to you and give you peace. We will look forward to seeing you guys next week.